Welcome to podcast number 39. These podcasts all come from a series of four books I have written entitled In Defense of Christianity. Volume 1, Freedom, is now available in ebook, paperback, and Audible at ronaldmesser.com or on Amazon and Audible. Today's podcast is taken from the end notes of Chapter 10, Volume 3, Desire versus Desire. This podcast is entitled The Tenth Commandment. James calls the Ten Commandments the Law of Liberty. In this series of podcasts, I intend to examine each of the Ten Commandments and explain why each is essential to liberty. In fact, if a nation does not follow all of the Ten Commandments, it will eventually decline into tribalism or totalitarianism. No nation can sustain liberty that turns its back on the absolute commandments of God. In Volume 3 of the series, In Defense of Christianity, entitled The Law of Liberty, I discuss the Ten Commandments in order as I attempt to prove that they are all necessary to freedom. In fact, I will assert that if the majority of citizens of any nation do not willingly keep the Ten Commandments, liberty cannot and will not sustain itself. It will, by necessity, turn into a police state. Those who turn their back on God will decline into the natural man, and therefore seek the lust of the flesh, rather than the spiritual truths of the everlasting God. The natural man is an enemy to freedom because by its very nature, it feeds on selfishness. In the podcasts, I do not follow the order of the books. If the podcasts appear random, it is because they are abominably random. I do not draw from the chapters of the books in chronological order. I draw randomly from the voluminous endnotes of 10 books I have written, divided into three series: In Defense of Christianity, In Defense of Intelligent Design, and In Defense of Spiritual Law. Only Volume 1 of In Defense of Christianity is presently available. Three other volumes in the first series are forthcoming. Volume 1, Freedom, is available on Amazon in paperback and ebook. It is also available as an audiobook on Audible. The others will appear in order, assuming I live long enough. I'm approaching 80 years old. As Andrew Marvel said, but at my back I always hear time's winged chariot hurrying near. In this podcast, whose theme is desire, I will discuss why the 10th commandment is essential to the law of liberty. In the King James Bible, the 10th commandment is given as follows: Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, nor his ass, nor anything that is thy neighbor's. Exodus 20:17. In the 10th commandment, we learn two things about desire that are necessary to know for the success of democracy. 1, the evil of unrighteous desires. And 2, the evil of covetousness that causes class warfare. First, the 10th commandment deals with unrighteous desires. Neither shalt thou desire thy neighbor's wife. Whereas the entire animal kingdom shares sexual desires or lust, only humans have control over those desires. Along with intelligence, agency, conscience, and belief in God, desire sets us apart from animals. We are only higher than the lower animals when we control our desires. The fall of empires begins when the people allow society to manipulate their desires. Socialism and communism are founded upon the institutionalized violation of the 10th commandment, Thou shalt not covet. Redistribution of wealth is stealing from the rich and given to the poor, so that all will have economic equality, regardless of personal achievement. Here is the dilemma we face. Desire is necessary to agency. We consider controlling another human's desires to be a fundamental violation of human rights, a nightmare of Orwell's 1984. In 1984, people are controlled by the thought police and the ubiquitous telescreens. Writing for computers, even Orwell didn't envision the ubiquity of modern-day cameras. We carry telescreens in our personal computers, as well as all of our other electronic devices. In addition, telescreens are everywhere we go. In Huxley's Brave New World, the state controls desire with sexual promiscuity and soma, a drug that dulls the senses. They also use genetic engineering and social conditioning. The DHC, director of Hatcheries and Conditioning, said, quote, "We also predestine and condition. We decant our babies as socialized human beings, as alphas and epsilons, as future sewage workers or future," he was going to say future world controllers, but correcting himself said, "future directories of hatcheries instead," unquote. In the novel Brave New World, even as embryos, some of those decanted are conditioned to hate the cold and thrive on heat so they can be sent to work in the tropics. As he said, they were predestined to immigrate to the tropics to be miners and acetate silk spinners and steel workers. They also used subliminal training by playing tapes over and over in their sleep. The director said to the eager young students who were voraciously taking notes, "And that is the secret of happiness and virtue, liking what you've got to do. All conditioning aims at that, making people like their unescapable social destiny." In Brave New World, the state gives in to uninhibited sexual desire by forbidding marriage, by encouraging unlimited sexual partners, and by creating babies in a test tube, thus releasing parents from the burden of bearing or rearing children. Birth is referred to as decanting. In both 1984 and Brave New World, love between men and women and family relationships are by necessity destroyed. In a tyranny, the government must be supreme. The 10th commandment is indispensable to the law of liberty because it deals with the destruction of the family. No democratic republic can exist where the majority of the families break down. Divorce today is over 50%, and family has been redefined until it has no meaning. The preservation of the family is so important to the law of liberty that 3 of the 10 commandments are devoted to protecting the family. Number 5, honor thy father and thy mother. Number 7, thou shalt not commit adultery. And number 10, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. As molten lava at the center of the earth, desire is the fire that burns within the human heart. If desire is not controlled, then goodbye to safety. All evil begins with uncontrolled desires. Our prisons incarcerate those who cannot conform to the norms of society. What happens when those norms become relative, and rather than control, they encourage uninhibited urges? When savage behavior becomes normal, then society must resort to the law of the jungle. The savages run free, and the innocent lock themselves into prisons. Such is the condition today. Uninhibited sexual appetites are encouraged, not condemned. One so-called expert in mocking chastity among you said, "You can't beat biology." In 1984, people are controlled with the telescreens, deceit, and torture, and by turning families against each other. The most chilling line in George Orwell's 1984 is when Winston realizes that he loves Big Brother. They finally had control of his desires. Until that moment, the state did not dare take Winston's life. After that moment, they didn't have to. The government understood that they could never control Winston until they could control his desires. American society today sees the above anti-utopias or dystopias as dire warnings and would not think of violating the sanctity of personal desires. At least, that is the illusion society lives under. In reality, we think nothing of promoting destructive behavior and inflaming uninhibited sexual desire. In fact, the purpose of most advertising, through fantasy, design, sexual innuendo, subliminal seduction, music, and repetition, is to generate desires for unnecessary and overpriced products. Hollywood launched the drug revolution with the movie Easy Rider. The sexual revolution began with the hippie movement. Movie ratings, flower children, free love, Playboy magazine, LSD, marijuana, communes, and music often about sex and drugs. The slogan coined by the Harvard professor Timothy Leary, "Turn on, tune in, and drop out," is a legacy of the 60s. It was not a phase. The music moved from rock and roll to hard rock, to heavy metal and beyond. The hippies put on business suits and became yuppies, but they kept the swinging lifestyles. The TV sitcoms moved from Mary Tyler Moore and Donna Reed to Three's Company, Will and Grace, Friends, and Sex and the City. The shift from Ozzie and Harriet, a traditional family, to the Bundys, a dysfunctional family, was hardly noticed. Even the title, Married with Children, suggested that marriage and family were separate entities. Married with Children was followed by Modern Family, which mocks traditional marriages, teaching that all marriages are alike. We are not so far from the Brave New World of Aldous Huxley.
Hollywood inflames teenage promiscuity with a flood of R-rated movies showing young people engaged in unlimited sexual activity without any negative consequences. No teen pregnancy, no unwed mothers, no imposed poverty, no guilt, no second thoughts, no God, no moral laws, no restraints, and no reality.
Their purpose has no other design than to make money by cashing in on the youth's natural desires.
Except for political correctness, almost nothing is censored on television, music, movies, magazines, internet, and other media.
Free condoms are the subject of presidential debates. Marijuana has been made legal in some states and has become increasingly popular in others.
Even prostitution has been made legal in parts of Nevada.
With our obsession with rights, almost nothing will stand up in courts anymore. Laws against gambling, prostitution, public nudity, cohabitation, plural marriages, etc. will all eventually disappear or be ignored. TV comedy has no limits to subject, theme, language, crudity, or nudity.
Casino gambling and the lottery are available in every state. Where money is involved, ways are invented to manipulate the laws.
Every vice is justified by language manipulation. One judge announced recently that poker was a game of skill, not chance, and therefore was not gambling. We use language to scrub off the stain of sin, like tartar from teeth, but no language can cure the consequences.
Is an addiction not an addiction because it is called by another name?
In a bizarre twist, a scene straight out of Huxley's Brave New World, there's a movement today to obscure gender, claiming that gender is a choice rather than a natural law.
Men today can compete as women in sports merely by declaring they are women. As Alice says at the gross distortion of her own body, it gets curiouser and curiouser.
The incongruent laws, rules, and regulations that are emerging in government, schools, and society to address such insanity, all in the name of sensitivity, are making fools of everybody. In an act almost too strange to believe, one of the leading makers of feminine products actually removed the symbol denoting women from its label in order to avoid offending men. The company did not want to hurt their feelings.
Major clothing chains are now carrying non-gender clothes to avoid offense. Some fast food services use only gender-neutral toys to entertain the children.
In any other age but ours, it would be low comedy. There are two ironic consequences of unlimited licentiousness: the loss of tragedy and the loss of comedy. We no longer know what is tragic, and we no longer know what is comic. People not wanting to be insensitive are afraid to laugh at the ridiculous and to cry at the barbaric.
The philosophy is that we shouldn't control desires against a person's will, but inflaming natural desires in unprepared youth is free game. Pornography, slander, blasphemy, taking the Lord's name in vain, using outrageously vulgar language and disreputable images are viewed as freedom of speech.
An age that thinks it can change gender knows no boundaries, and they would have us all live in an Alice in Wonderland world. Oh, that we had Horace, Juvenal, Voltaire, Swift, and Twain today. The ink of those acid-tongued satirists would burn through the paper.
Networks, once censored, have placed the entire responsibility of censorship upon parents in an economic-strapped society that has 50% divorce rate and where single parents or both parents are often barely holding the family together.
The U.S. Mail, once concerned about things that would poison the minds of youth and destroy their morality, is now only concerned about harmful chemicals that would poison the body.
What was once hidden by law is now publicly displayed on news racks at every convenience store, grocery store, and discount center.
Adult products using explicit language are promoted on public television to every age group.
We really don't mind manipulating others' desires for profit as long as the people have the illusion of being free.
The only barrier between our youth and designing predators is a label: PG, PG-13, M, R, and X. All of which are available uncensored on the internet to every child.
The R rating was once a warning to parents. Now it is an advertisement to entice youth.
Meanwhile, society is left with the burden of enforcing laws against the effects of those who violate the Tenth Commandment. When Ted Bundy, one of the nation's most notorious psychosexual serial killers, said in court that he was influenced by pornography, some women were outraged, not at his addiction to pornography, but at the very idea that Bundy would try to blame his behavior on something other than himself.
We are a society that lives in denial of causal connections. A rapist and murderer should not be freed simply because he is under addiction to pornography, any more than murderers should be freed because they are under addictions to drugs. But that should not prevent society from seeing the connection and making laws to protect our citizens from predators.
It is, of course, a delicate balance in a free society to determine what should be legal and what should be illegal. However, what is the value of outlawing murder and rape and ignoring the very evidence of what promotes murder and rape, such as the total absence of censorship? It is like outlawing the Black Plague while making the rats more comfortable.
Hollywood, which popularized cigarettes, drugs, alcohol, adultery, promiscuity, gambling, divorce, free sex, nudity, cohabitation, revealing dress, etc., is still claiming that they do not influence society. They merely reflect it.
The assumption is that people are mindless and do not know that 2 plus 2 is still 4.
In perhaps the most astonishing move of all, a large portion of our society is suggesting that abortion is good.
One former child star boasted to an applauding crowd that, quote, she had just had the best abortion ever, unquote. Rather than seeing the statement as bizarre beyond belief, brought on by hysteria, the applauding crowd saw it as an affirmation that abortion was a virtue.
Today's prurience promoters say abstinence is evil, gender is a choice, and sexual preference doesn't matter. And many strangely appear to believe them, even waiting for a confused child to determine his own gender. Perhaps they should reread the cautionary tale, The Emperor's New Clothes.
How well we enforce the Ten Commandments determines the success of our society. If we have enough in our society who have power over us, who violate the Tenth Commandment in their hearts and act out their desires in their high office, then society will be forced to become a police state. One virtue can kill 10,000 vices.
In the same way, the violation of one virtue can spawn 10,000 crimes against society.
We condemn the fruit, but we protect those who sow the seeds.
Our society doesn't seem to understand that simple truth. In the name of rights, we prefer to condemn a virtue and sacrifice millions of lives and trillions of dollars controlling the consequences.
As the number of unscrupulous offenders increases, the number of laws must increase to limit their actions. Until soon, we are all bound like criminals in a cage.
The singular uniqueness of the 10 pillars of freedom is this. They are each so strategically placed that the fall of one pillar doesn't merely weaken the structure of democracy. The fall of any one of the pillars, like dominoes, will bring the entire building down unless it is replaced with sufficient laws to support the building in its place.
The Ten Commandments are the foundation of freedom. If any part of the foundation is bad, the building will fall. As we know, a pillar is a single column, stately and beautiful, smooth as marble, bringing all eyes to its cornices. The massive mountain of laws that replace the damaged pillar have barnacles, which are black, abrasive, and sharp, that cut all those who cross them.
If we want to return to liberty, we must return to the law of liberty. There is no other option. The Ten Commandments were given to the children of Israel to free them from the bondage of Egypt. Following that, they were given judges rather than pharaohs or kings, and therefore became a democratic state led by true prophets of God. As long as the house of Israel followed the Ten Commandments, they remained free. Their decline began when they rejected the Lord and demanded kings.
In the same way, our decline began when we rejected the Ten Commandments and replaced the laws of God with political correctness.
As individuals, we have little control over what is happening in Washington or Hollywood. We have our voice, we have our votes, but we, as individuals, can choose to personally reinstate the law of liberty, the commandments of Christ, into a position of prominence in our lives.
Thank you for listening. Watch for our next podcast.
In Defense of Christianity is available at ronaldmesser.com.